Thank you very much for having me. And thanks for coming at an unusual time. I know it's difficult. So yeah, I will talk today about 5D N equals to 1 SEFTs and SQFTs that live on brainwebs. And then I will tell you about their Higgs branch and how to access this via magnetic quivers. And hopefully I will get to a part where I will talk about more recent stuff when we include oriented folds, especially O7+. So please interrupt me at any time. And since this is Blackboard, I mean, not so constrained. But yeah. All right. So this will not be so different today.
Are you?
No, this is not me, but very good. I'll still wipe it. So in five dimensions, of course, gauge theories are not randomizable. But if we have a five-dimensional SEFT or CFT, then we can trigger some flow, and we could have a 5D gauge theory, which will be an EFT. And this is actually understood quite well if there is an S here. So 5D n equals to 1. This is what I'll be doing today. There has recently also been some work on finding CFTs in five dimensions which are not Swiss metric, but I will not talk about it. OK, so 5D n equals to 1 will be the name of the game. The most basic examples were found by Seiberg, the rank 1 EM theories, which are the UV completions of SU2 plus n minus 1 flavors. So I could say now, this is rank 1, I would say now there is actually a second rank 1 theory that was found much more recently by Bartwatch. So this is Seiberg. There's also Bartwatch. This rank 1 theory does not have any gauge theory description. And we can, so far the Higgs branch is not known, but with these magnetic quivers in the presence of, read from a brainweb in the presence of an oriented fold, we can actually find out what the Higgs branch of this guy is. So that's kind of a neat result that I'll hopefully show at the end. Okay, so if you want to engineer some 5D n equals to 1 theory, well, if you want to study one, the best tools we have are string theory. And there are kind of two ways two common ways to get a 5D n equals to 1 theory. The first option is to put M theory on some local Calabi-Yau threefold. And let's say yes. Okay, I'll just call this X. And another way to do this is to use a brainweb. Or more exactly, five brains in type 2B. And in the case that this X is toric, here's some toric diagram. Then actually, the map between these two constructions is very clear. It's just a dualization of this toric diagram. Would look something like this. This would be our five-brain web. I will explain what that means exactly in a moment. So the two approaches are the same there. However, if we're not toric, then it's not that clear how this map works and if there will always be a brain web, probably not. Or for any brain web, will there be some Calabi-Yau 3? Probably yes. How do we find it? That's an open problem. And there's some partial results on this, but yeah, I think it's an interesting problem. If you would like to hear about it at another time, I'm happy to tell you. Okay, good. So I just deleted the the little diagram that was over there, but I'm going to draw a very similar one. That's okay. Maybe I should have checked this first. Okay, so we're in type 2B. And we're going to have some NS5 brains, some D5 brains. We're going to have some general PQ5 brains, and also some PQ7 brains. And so the D5 would be the 1,0, and the NS5 would be the 0,15 brain. And they extend into a space-time in the following way. Okay, so the NS5 will occupy the 0 to 5 space-time directions, the D5, the 0 to 4, and the 6, and the PQ5 brains, they will lie at an angle in this X5, X6, plane. And at string coupling, or axiodilaton tau is I, the angle alpha, well, the tangent of alpha will be Q over P. Okay, so when we now draw a brain web, I will always draw this plane. Okay, so let's show the simplest brain web. This will be the directions I draw. I could take a D5 and an NS5. And if they meet, then they become a 1,15 brain. That's the rules of the game. And I can terminate those on 7 brains. Come with little monotomy cuts with monotomy matrices associated to them. And it's by this monotomy matrix that we distinguish a PQ7 brain. Now, there are some rules for a brain web to be consistent, and that's essentially that at every vertex there will be some charge conservation. So, say we have some PI, QI brains that meet at a vertex. Then I want the sum of this to be 0. And furthermore, so this is one rule for consistency. Another rule for consistency is the so-called S rule, which is actually not so easy to state in full generality for a brain web. So I'm going to just state a kind of a simpler rule. And this says that only one D5 can end between a NS5 and a D7. So if I draw this drawing here where I have a 1,07 brain, I put n D5s here, meet one NS5. Now because of charge conservation, this will be a N,15 brain. This is only okay if n is 1. If n is 2, then this would not be a supersymmetric brain system, and we don't allow for those configurations in what we'll do. Okay, so let's actually continue here. Let's actually write on a brain web that realizes a 15 plus 1 gauge theory. So if I take n parallel D5 brains, I can put them between two NS5 brains. And now because of charge conservation, of course, there will be some bending. Now, the low energy world volume theory on this will be a 5d n equals to 1 pure SUN theory. The gauge coupling is given by this distance. Now, I can, I could, of course, modify this n over here and kind of turn these brains a little. So if I do that, I could, for example, make this into a k, minus 1, and this would be n minus k, 1. Then what I'm doing is modifying the Chern-Simons level of the theory. So this would now be a pure SUN level k theory. Now, I could add some flavor brains to the story. I do that by just attaching kind of semi-infinite brains here, or I can also terminate them on a 7 brain, 1,07 brains. And so I could add a bunch of them. This will then give me a SUK, a SUN level k minus NF over 2 theory with NF fundamental hypers. Okay, these are the most basic constructions with brainwaves. Now, let's look at the moduli space of these theories. First of all, are there any questions? So, of course, if you've not seen any brains, then this may be a bit weird. And if you've seen them many times, then this may be quite boring. I understand. So, okay, but good. All right, so in a theory with 8 superchargers, a gauge theory with 8 superchargers, we'll have a vector multiplet, a hypermultiplet, and if I turn on scalars in a vector multiplet, I move on the Coulomb branch. If I turn on scalars in a hypermultiplet, I move on the Higgs branch of the theory. So let's look at a concrete example. SU2 with two flavors, two fundamental hypers. The corresponding brain web is this. And now, so here all of these brains are supposed to lie on top of each other in the middle. And now if I want to move on the Coulomb branch, I can do this by kind of opening up a face here. This will give me this configuration. Now, we can see that this SU2, because the brains are separated, is now broken to a U1, which is what we expect from a Coulomb branch. Now, the other degrees of freedom that I have here for these brains to move are, if I actually just this one time try to do a little artistic drawing. Okay. This may go badly. Okay, so now I'm adding this x, 7, 8, 9 direction to my drawing. And what it can do is move these 5 brains along that direction. The 7 brains are kind of rails. And let's use some colors. I could take one piece. Like this, and the other piece like that. So they have some separation between them. So this is essentially using the two flavors that I have to Higgs the gauge group from SU2 to SU1, which is, of course, trivial. And this would be the Higgs branch. No, because it would be insane to draw all of these 3D pictures. I will replace this with just a colored drawing. Let me actually go over there. I will just draw in color the brains which move together. Okay, now the way we go on a Higgs branch with a brain web is we find a decomposition of the web into subwebs that have to fulfill these consistency conditions that I talked about. So here we actually have a second way to do that. There are two ways to split this web. The second way to split let me use some different colors. Would be like that. Okay. Now what does this mean? Well, this just says that the Higgs branch of this theory consists of two cones. And actually one can do a classical computation. So the Higgs branch of the classical theory, I'll denote it by an H, is just the hyperkähler quotient. And this is actually the minimal Nilpotent orbit of SO4. Which is a union of two cones, which are both C2 mod Z2. Okay, so far so good. Are there any questions on what I did so far? All right. So now, from this drawing, of course, I don't immediately see that this moduli space should be C2 mod Z2. But there is a way to extract this information, and that's by associating what is called a magnetic quiver. This was first done in a systematic way by Yagi, Cabrera, and Hanani. So the idea is that every subweb gets a node in the magnetic quiver. So this is now not a 7 brain. I'll get one red guy, one blue guy. And depending, I could, of course, have one subweb be there multiple times, kind of a stack of webs. This will give me the rank of the magnetic quiver. This is my magnetic quiver. Both of these ranks are 1 in this case. And then the number of links is determined by the stable intersection of these two subwebs if we view them as tropical curves. Computation of a stable intersection is very easy. We kind of move them apart a little bit, as we already did in drawing. And we look where the curves intersect. Then we compute a determinant of the charges. So here, this would be 1, 0. And the absolute value of the determinant, 1, 0, 0, 1. That's 1. Here we have 1, -1, 1, 0. That's also 1. And this gives me these two links here. And now, the idea of the magnetic quiver is that you compute the 3D Coulomb branch. And this will give you a cone in the Higgs branch of the theory we're studying. So of course, this is a 5-dimensional theory. Where do I get this 3-dimensional theory from it? Well, of course, I could think of taking this 5D theory, going down to 3 dimensions by compactification, and then using 3D mirror symmetry. So then it would be justified to call this a 3D mirror as well. But I actually don't want to do this. I want to stay in 5D, just kind of identifying what the moduli are. And actually, here we have these two branches that intersect. If we would go down even to 4D, the problem is that they kind of split apart. So it's not really clear what we would mean by the 3D mirror. As it's kind of clear here, we have two magnetic quivers, because there will be another one here. And well, it's kind of unfortunate. It will be the same, but this is not always the case. So here again, we would have two nodes, one of them orange, one of them green. both of them are U1s. And again, we have two edges between, computed from these two intersection numbers here. OK, now the Coulomb branch of this quiver is indeed C2 mod Z2. So yes, that's recovering a classical result. Now, why we actually do this is because this computation from the brain web doesn't care at all about whether we are at finite coupling. So again, to repeat, this here is the gauge coupling. But we can also go to the infinite coupling point, where the theory becomes strongly coupled, and there will be instanton operators, which become massless, which now contribute to the Higgs branch, to the moduli space. And we actually see those moduli. So let me do this. So the brain web at infinite coupling of the 5D theory would look like that. And I'll also OK. So now we can decompose our web again. Let's do the right decomposition first. This one will actually stay unchanged. So we have this piece, and we have this piece. Magnetic quiver stays the same. And over here, what we can now do is this blue piece, we can actually split into two more. This guy here, and then this guy here. And that. So here the magnetic quiver will look different. It's going to look like that. Let me just do some colorings. No. OK. So what happened here is that when going to infinite coupling, the instant operators, which now become massless, they contribute to one of these two cones and make it bigger. The Coulomb branch of this is the minimal Nilpotent orbit of SL3, or before C2 mod Z2 is the minimal Nilpotent orbit of SL2. So we also see an enhancement in global symmetry. See if this. Yes. This, which actually I write as A2. Well, this is still C2 mod Z2. And yeah, so one thing we can observe already is an enhancement from the SO4 global symmetry that rotates the 4½ hypers, which enhances to SU3 times SU2, which is the E3 algebra. As we mentioned before, there are these EN theories. This is one of the examples. Okay. So the neat thing here is that we've done something where we can compute classically what the answer is. We use the brain system to derive a different way of computing it. All of this matches. And now at infinite coupling, we trust this result that since nothing in the method changes, that this will give us the infinite coupling Higgs branch. And yeah. So let me do one. Are there questions? OK, then let me do one more example.
Yes, sorry. Yep. The question was the difference between diagram here and there. However, they have similar components, but there is a crossing at one point, and here it's like in different points.
Here, you mean?
Yeah, the right one there and the right one in the middle.
Yeah, so I drew this a bit badly. I'm not sure if I quite got the question, but. So here, it's true that it looks like they're crossing differently, but actually computing this, so it's a result in tropical geometry. If you want to compute the stable intersection of two curves, it doesn't matter like how you move them apart a little bit, it will always give the same answer. So in principle, this all intersects on a point, but now I move it apart a little bit. And then again, I have this guy and this guy here. Mm-hmm. And we get the same.
But they result in the same cube. Yeah. But they result in the same cube.
Exactly. Yeah. This really doesn't change at all, basically. I can just move this kind of continuously, and it's the same story. Mm-hmm. It's really here that this blue guy, when I move this together, I can actually break further. Mm-hmm. And that's the extra moduli I get at infinite coupling. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Let's do a slightly more involved example. And at some point, I will give you the precise rules to read a magnetic quiver. So let's look at SU3, level 0 with 6 flavors. The corresponding brain web will look like this. And now I can, again, send my brains along my 5 brains along the 7 brains. In this case, every segment between the 7 brains will contribute to its own node in magnetic quiver, because these segments can move on their own. So let me do some colorings. Okay, if you want to read the magnetic quiver from here, then again, each of these segments gets a node. But in this case, I will have some higher rank nodes. This will be the magnetic quiver. I don't have to do all of the coloring, but yeah, you probably get the idea. Now, here, the way that I compute the intersections is kind of in the same way, but I only take one of these 3 guys. I only take 1 web to compute intersection number. So this is just the 1. And if I have brains ending from opposite sides, this also gives me a +1 contribution to the intersection number. This is why there's a link between here and here. And now, if we move to infinite coupling here, let's just do this. What will happen is I bring these 2 brains together. And now let's make one of them a bit longer, maybe. Now, the extra moduli that I see here is because I can split what was before part of a 5 brain along the 7 brain that kind of interacts with it. Now the new quiver looks like that. So we can see that we've actually gained 2 extra moduli. Okay, are there questions about this? It's very clear. Let me give the generic rule to read a magnetic quiver. Okay, so we say we have a brain web W, which we then decompose into subwebs. So the W is equal to a union of stacks of subwebs. So this number m here would be the number of brains, of identical brains. And then wi would be these individual components here, here, and so on. Let's say we have n of them. And then the intersection number between two subwebs is given by the stable intersection plus two contributions that I'll explain. So the stable intersection is what I've mentioned before. Basically, we have these two subwebs. We move them apart a little bit. And then where two brains intersect, we compute the determinant. OK. And it's a sum over all of these guys that are relevant. Now, this x means whether two brains will end, or two five brains will end on the seven brain from opposite sides. So this will give me a plus one contribution. And then this y counts how many five brains end from the same side. Maybe I should have used two different colors. Like that, this will give me a minus one contribution. OK. Now, this vector m here is the rank vector of the quiver. And these intersection numbers here actually give me the adjacency matrix of the quiver. OK, which encodes the number of links between different nodes. And the self-intersection will be twice the number of adjoints minus 2. So if we actually compute here, the self-intersection of any of these guys will be minus 2, because we get a minus 1 contribution from each D7 brain. Yeah. OK, any questions about that? OK, so let me repeat why this is now a neat thing. First of all, because we get access to these strongly coupled SCFTs, we can count these extra moduli. But actually, so having a quiver description or a 3D Coulomb branch description for moduli space brings a number of techniques with it that have been developed in recent years. So for example, one of these techniques is computing the Hasse diagram of symplectic leaves of the space. So a Higgs branch is a hyperkähler cone, or a union thereof, in the cases we're looking at. And there is a symplectic form which will degenerate on singular loci. And this gives us a stratification into a finite number of leaves. So let me just draw. I will use this example here. I'll just give you the answer. For this, for the Coulomb branch of this guy, there will be three leaves. I can compute this via a technique which is called quiver subtraction. There are actually now quite a few techniques. And this technique was actually first derived from playing with brain webs. So this taught us about how to deal with Coulomb branches. Now we kind of turned it around. So here there are three symplectic leaves. There is the origin. Then there is a five-dimensional leaf, which is, if you take the closure, the minimum Nilpotent orbit of SL6. And then there is a transverse slice to this, which, yes, I think if you don't know what a transverse slice is, then I can explain. But otherwise, I'll just move past it, which is D4. And overall, this is a 10-dimensional moduli space. Now, what does this mean in terms of physics? Well, this actually tells us about the Higgs mechanism. So on this bottom leaf here, the full SU3 gauge group is unbroken. Now, if I move on this next leaf, then here I will only have an SU2. And from the precise geometry of this slice, I see that this should be SU2 with four flavors. And this is number four here. So we can Higgs from SU3 with six flavors to SU2 with four flavors, which is, again, something we can also compute classically. And then I can completely Higgs, and I arrive at, let's call this SU1. Now, we can play the same game now at infinite coupling. So at infinite coupling, let me just give this a name. I'll put a little hat, which means I take the UV completion of this gauge theory. And I will now give you the Hasse diagram, which I can compute from this magnetic quiver. First of all, this stays roughly the same, but the top part here gets modified. There is still an A5 down here, and then there's a D5. Because now, on this leaf here, we realize the UV completion of SU2 with four flavors, where we get these extra moduli. That's why the slice changes. But now, there are actually more leaves. There will be two more guys, which both have, as a transverse slice, the E6 min Noetherian orbit, which tells us that we can also Higgs to the UV completion of SU2 with five flavors, which is not something that we could do in a classical theory. So not only do more dimensions open up in the Higgs branch, but we really have a different pattern of Higgsings. And furthermore, the Higgs branch will be the same for any Chern-Simons level, classically, but at infinite coupling, this will also change. So we have access to these things with a magnetic quiver. Any questions? Yeah?
So how do you know when the 5D gauge theory UV completes to a 5D SCFT or maybe even a 6D SCFT or even 6D real string theories, right? They have all these UV.
Yeah.
So how do you know that from?
So from the brain web, it's tricky. So if you find a way to push it together, that's then you have an answer, like you know you can complete. But you cannot really exclude, well, I don't know of a good way to exclude this possibility. So let's just maybe look at an example. So let's say we have a SU2 with five flavors. Let me just draw them. Like this. So SU2 with four flavors would be the straight. Now I add one more. Now I get some problem here of these brains intersecting each other. So pushing them together is actually not possible. But now I can use the monodromy that I talked about before. I can move this through the monodromy cut. This will now be acted upon, of course, by the monodromy matrix and bend like that. And then I can do a Hanani-Witten transition. I move this past here. This will create one brain. And now we have this system where I can now take this guy down and shrink all of this together kind of at the same time. And then this is how we would get this. This system here. So if I can do that, we're good. But now when you cannot do that is kind of a tricky question. So sometimes it's rather a complicated path of moves that you have to do. So there I don't know of a really good answer. Of course there are other ways to do it. And people have written papers about the geometric engineering way, for example, where they have certain conditions on how you can glue surfaces and finding out what is the marginal theory that completes in 60, and then you can do deformations. Yeah. Okay. More questions? Good. So then, let me maybe mention one more thing we can do with magnetic quiver, just to kind of advertise. It's so of course in 5e so far we've talked about Higgsings, but we also have mass deformations that we can do. And a mass deformation will be a Veit-Illopoulos deformation of the magnetic quiver. So if we understand those, we actually understand deformations of the 5D theory, which is also a neat thing that's captured there. Actually, though, doing Veit-Illopoulos deformations of 3D theories is quite a complicated problem. There's a large space of deformations. So it's not as nice as the computation of these Hasse diagrams of Higgsings. It's actually not going to do a very precise thing. OK, let me now talk about the inclusions of oriented faults in this picture. All right, there are two things I can do. One would be parallel to our D5 friends here. We could include let me just use some color, an O5 plus minus tilde oriented fold. Or we could include a O7, which would be point-like, which could be O7 minus or O7 plus. Now, what will happen when we have these O5 oriented fold planes? Of course, the gauge group will become orthogonal or symplectic, but also the magnetic quiver will be an orthosymplectic quiver. And this will reflect it reflects the presence of this oriented fold. Now, what happens instead when we put an O7, then we will actually get, so far these magnetic quivers, they always had as a base, kind of an A-type Dinking diagram, which comes from all of these D5s. This is what become orthosymplectic when they include the O5. What happens with the O7 is that actually there will be a folding to a different Lie algebra Dinking diagram. So if I have an O7 minus, I will actually get some D-type diagram. And in this case, though, we can still use the regular magnetic quiver rules, because as Sen told us, this splits into regular 7 brains. So the rules to read the magnetic quiver are the same. OK, now what happens with O7 plus, though, is we'll actually get C-type Dinking diagrams as our quiver. But there will at least be a portion of this. So very importantly, there will be non-simply laced. Now, what this means in terms of a gauge theory is very unclear. So these non-simply laced quivers, they appear whenever we have these kind of oriented folds. And so we know also in three dimensions, we know gauge theories where we can describe a Coulomb and a Higgs branch. We can do three mirror symmetry, and we would get such a non-simply laced quiver. We don't have a gauge theory interpretation because we don't know if we have a link like this, what this is supposed to be. It's not a hypermultiplet inner representation of the gauge group. We could think of it as a representation of the torus in the gauge group, but it's not exactly what's happening. And we don't actually have access to the Higgs branch. But we do have access to the Coulomb branch of this, and so we can still use it as magnetic quiver for our theories. OK, let me show you how this is done. Okay, let me do a concrete example. Let's say we want to have a SO 2NC gauge group and NF vectors. Now, okay, I will use this color for the O7 plus. We can have an O7 plus plane. This will now act as a point like, well, this is the fixed point of reflections in R2. And there will be monotomy cut, which kind of goes both ways. But I'm kind of drawing the double cover of this quotient. And the associate matrix is this guy. So now I can take parallel D5s. This reflection will give us this SO2NC if we have NC D5 brains. And then I terminate them on LS5s. Actually, this action of the monotomy matrix tells us that this should be 2, -1 brains, so that I will have a charge conservation at this point. Okay. Now, if I want to add some fundamental or some vector representation matter, then I can do the same thing as before and just add these semi-infinite brains and then actually terminate on D7s. Now let's fix some numbers and do an example. Okay, let's take SO8 with 4 vectors. And I will directly go to the infinite coupling. Okay, now the first thing we can do is just basically do exactly the same as we did before. We look at all of the segments that we can now move independently. They will contribute as a node in a magnetic quiver. But there is now relation. So the moduli over here, since I'm drawing this double cover of the physical space, which is the set to quotient, these moduli here and these moduli here have to be identical. So they will actually only contribute one node to the quiver. So let's start with this 4. There will only be one U3 in the magnetic quiver, one U2, one U1. Over here, the story is basically the same. But now, actually, here there will be this non-symbolized edge. So there is a notion in 3D equals 4 quivers, a notion of balance, which basically counts the R charge of monopole operators that appear in the theory. And this balance of this node is the same as the balance in the node of this quiver. And the same thing goes for this one. So putting this Orient default doesn't change the balance of this node. And this motivates what exact non-symbolized edge I put here. This motivates the orientation. Of course, it's not clear what I should do here exactly, but this fixes it. Okay, now we also have a U2, which comes from these vertical guys, and then there will be the same thing. There will be a non-symbolized edge, U1. And this is not the full answer, though, because the presence of this O7 plus will also modify this intersection number. So actually, there will be an adjoint loop here, which comes from a modified stable intersection due to the O7 plus. Okay, the formula for this I can also give you. We say that if we have two 5 brains, which meet on an O7 plus, then the intersection number here, let's call them PQ, and RS will be the PQ or S determinant as before, and then a contribution to QS, which comes from the orient default. Okay. Now here, you should protest that surely this cannot be the contribution to something that should be an SL2Z invariant. Clearly it's not. Well, that's because an 07 plus is not SL2Z invariant. Actually, this monotomy matrix here will be modified under global SL2Z transformations. So really, I shouldn't talk about an 07 plus, but I should talk about a, let's call them UV, 07 plus. And now, this UV, so this will be our what fixes the SL2Z frame, goes into this formula, will be PQ, RS plus 2 PQUV RSUV. Okay, now that looks a bit better. Still, there is an issue that what I haven't drawn here conveniently is the monotomy cut of the 07 plus itself. Now, I could turn this, and when I turn it and I move it past this brain, then these charges will change. So again, this is not really invariant. Well, we can make it fully invariant by adding a minus 1, it's not very nice, minus 1 to the epsilon, where epsilon is either 1 or 0, depending on the angle of this brain. So it's 0 if this monotomy cut can point in the UV direction without moving past the brain, and it's 1 if we have to move it past the brain to point in a UV direction. All right, so now we have a fully invariant thing, and if we add this to the same rules that we had before, we can read these non-simple lace magnetic quivers, and then actually we can use a lot of our technology to, for example, compute a Hasse diagram, and also in principle we could now work out how the FR deformations of these guys work by doing mass deformations of the brain web, which could possibly teach us about Higgs branches of these guys. At least we will know about deformations of these Higgs branches, even though we don't know the geometry. Okay, so now let me just give a very final example where we can apply this 07 plus story, and this is to this missing rank 1 theory that was found by Laksha Bhardwaj, which we get by, okay, let's go to the brain web. Maybe you're running out of time. But what we compute from the rank 1 Bhardwaj theory is this magnetic quiver, and this tells us that we are dealing with this third symmetric product of C2. Okay, now let me come to an end here. Let me summarize. So from a brain web, we can derive this magnetic quiver, and putting some oriented folds, we can still manage. Now, one thing that could be done is to include both 05 and 07 oriented folds. This would then lead to magnetic quivers, which are both non-simply laced and orthosymplectic. And we have studied them a bit before, but not so much. And there can be some neat moduli spaces to be found. So one thing that I didn't mention is that a Higgs branch does not have to be a variety. It can actually be non-reduced. And this non-reducedness, so any presence of nilpotent operators, we cannot capture with magnetic quiver technology because, by definition, these are varieties. The Coulomb branches of a quiver is a variety. So this is something that's missing to the picture, and that would be quite nice to work out, how to get access to nilpotent operators from a brain web. If we do the classical theory, we can compute what these nilpotent operators are, some meson traces, stuff like that. But how do we see that? That's an open problem. Also, another, and this is actually a much bigger issue, is that the moduli space from such a brain web isn't always, even as a variety, isn't always the Coulomb branch of a quiver. There can be issues, and attempts to solve these issues are kind of decorating a quiver to account for a generalization of what a discrete gauging is, I have no good way to explain what I mean by that. It's really, it would be something I would like to know and like to tell you, but I can explain in a few words what I mean by the moduli space is not just the Coulomb-Radov quiver, but something with a quotient somewhere. Let's think about instantons in a product space, in a product group, G1, G2. So here we could think of our SU2, SU3 example of before. Let's look at two instantons. Either both of them go in here, that would be one cone. This we can do with magnetic quiver, no problem. They could both go in the other group, also fine. But now if one instanton is in here, and one instanton is in here, the magnetic quiver I would read would just be the product, or the sum, of the two individual one instanton magnetic quivers. But this cannot be the answer, because the instanton moduli space always includes the position of the instanton. So this would be a Z2 factor. Now, if I have the product of two instanton moduli spaces, I would have these two Z2 factors. But really, when I have two instantons in some group, then their position moduli are not just C4, but it's C4 mod Z2. It's actually the symmetric product of C2. So there is this Z2 quotient that I don't see in a magnetic quiver. Let me maybe draw them so it becomes a bit clearer. So let's say we're looking at SU2, SU3. If both instantons are in the SU2, I would read a quiver like this. If both of them are in the SU3, I would see something like this. And now, if one of them is in one of them is in the other, I would see something like that. But if I compute the Coulomb branch of this, it has a C4 factor inside, where it should be a C4 mod Z2 factor. And this is an open problem. And the way we kind of fix it, at least as a bookkeeping tool, is we put some decoration. And now we say if we shrink the instantons to zero size, if we turn off their actual instanton moduli and reduce to only position moduli, then this would look something like this. And now these red circles denote that it should do a Z2 gauging of the space. And in general, it would be an SN gauging of the space I'm dealing with. And this is really a big open problem, because if we can understand what these decorated quivers are, how to even define them, then we would also gain access, for example, to non-normal spaces, which is something that we cannot have for Coulomb branch of a regular quiver theory. So I think it's a neat problem. All right, and I think I will stop here and take questions. If there are any.
Yeah, any questions?
Since you came to rank one series, so among these Seyberg five-dimensional series, there were E7 and E8 series,
yep,
which are a bit more tricky.
Yes, indeed.
So is there a way to draw a quiver and compute E7 symmetry out of it?
So the quiver is very easy. The brainweb is more annoying to get.
I mean the brainweb, yeah.
Yeah, the brainweb, it's also doable. So we can actually, so if you want to do the resolution using the monotremies, this would take quite a while. It's doable, but we can work our way backwards from knowing what the answer should be. So 48, well, let's do maybe E7, let's the draw. This should be the magnetic quiver. And now we can kind of work our way backwards. I will now draw the dual toric diagram to the brain web. We can start with the TN theory. Like this. And then kind of Higgs segments between seven brains by putting white dots. If you would go to the class S picture, for example, we're closing punctures. And this way we get the, this maybe, we would get the corresponding dual graph, and then we can work our way back to the brainweb. Yeah, that's a way to do it. I can give you the precise one if you want.
So, I mean, these non-normal guys,
yeah.
I mean, they have a normalization. So,
yeah.
I sort of like taking one of these smooth guys and then sort of knocking out just a few functions.
Yeah. You mean, for example, M?
Yeah. The infamous M.
Just like C2 without X and Y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow.
So, the quiver that we would propose for M, mm-hmm. motivated by how you find it, how you identify it in symmetric products, would be to put a link of two here, non-simplaced link here, and here just a regular thing. And now, of course, if we remove the decoration, it's C2,
mm-hmm.
sorry, C4. And if we add the decoration, it should be C2 times M. That's the idea. Now, how do you manipulate, for example, a monopole formula so it spits out that Hilbert series? Like, I don't know. It's, yeah, there's something is lacking to that, yeah.
Any further questions? All right, let's thank you again.
Thank you.